Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Thursday, March 15th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Your daily dose of happy, your second daily dose of happy for the day. I love doing second daily doses of happy. I like first doses too, but when I get to do two a day, that's even better. It's like twice the fun. It's like double mint gum or something, you know? It's just twice the fun. And I enjoy it. I love doing the intros. The intros remind me, this is a good thing. This is fun. So how you doing, Wendy?
It is a good thing. I'm good. And, you know, when you just said the date, something popped like, what's significant about March 15th? And I went, oh, this is Steve, who's my previous business partner, his birthday.
Oh.
He transitioned maybe about 7 years ago. Hmm. And the thought just occurred to me, he may be listening. So, Steve, if you're listening via the other side, mm-hmm. punch us up with some good feeling energy today.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. That would be great. Yeah. Love to hear from Steve. Actually, my father passed 10 years ago on, what's today, Thursday? So 10 years ago on Tuesday, on Monday, rather. That was the day he transitioned. So, Dad, if you're listening, same thing from you. And of course, if it's my dad, I know that if I get a message from him, I know it's going to be a really unusual word. It's going to be what I call a dad word. Because that's how he lets us know that it's him. Like when right after he passed, in order to let my sister know that it was him, he used the word festive, and no one in the family but Dad would use festive. So it was that kind of a thing. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
It is cool.
Well, I'll know that if Steve shows up for me, I'll see some kind of historical costume because we were costume partners.
Okay. So what was his favorite era, do you think?
Renaissance.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he did Renaissance fairs and he built many Renaissance costumes and he had all sorts of Renaissance type tchotchkes and, you know, that was his thing.
Very good. Yeah. Renaissance, that I don't know if it still is. I know at one point that was hugely popular. It probably still is because it had a pretty big following. But Renaissance fairs and Renaissance weekends and so forth are just gigantic, or at least they used to be. I presume they still are. I don't know.
Well, it was really fun because in our relationship, he and I had ups and downs, and I had left our joint business because we were not in a good place together, and it just was not a happy thing for me to stay in that environment. And so it was probably a couple years later, I just sensed, like I'd think about him every now and then, but because I'm the one who left the business, it's kind of like I'm the one who asked for the divorce, you know, mm-hmm. in the business.
Right.
So he was really, really angry at me for a long time. And, you know, I had no idea when maybe he'd get over it, but I cared about him and he'd been my friend for years before we were ever in business together.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was at my desk. I worked from home at the time and I was thinking about him and I asked the question, you know, to my inner being, can I give him a call? Like, would this be a good time? And I got, no, not yet, but he'll reach out to you.
Oh.
And I was like, huh, that's cool.
That's a nice answer.
And I promise you, within several days, he called me. And I mean, I hadn't talked to him in over 2 years.
Wow.
And he let me know that he had a heart attack.
Oh my.
About a year before. And that after the heart attack, he changed. And what he believed about things changed.
Really?
And, you know, he said, yeah, he goes, when you have something where you're staring at death, you look at your whole life and you think about what's important.
Mm.
And he said, I had to let go of anger and let go of all sorts of things. And so we reconnected. He actually hired me for like the next year. I started working for him freelance. And it was really wild because what had happened is he actually had begun to get messages, psychic messages or from the other side messages, and he didn't know what to do with them.
Mm.
And he knew that I kind of delved in that arena,
right.
which I thought was really hysterical because I'd been talking to him like this for 15 or 20 years and he never listened to me. And now all of a sudden it's like, hey, what can you tell me? How can you help me?
Well, apparently he did listen on some level anyway. Otherwise, he wouldn't have known that you were even into that.
Yeah, he knew about it, but he just didn't drink it in. He didn't believe it, you know.
Right.
And so the next chapter of his life was he began to develop his psychic medium skills.
Wow.
And unlike any other psychic I've ever known, how the spirit world worked with him was because he was an expert in the Renaissance and in costume history, a being or an entity from the other side would show him things that had his, historical reference that he knew about.
Oh, okay.
And so he got things in pictures, and he would describe things like, I see a cane. It was probably from the 1800s, and it had this scrolling effect, and it was made of wood, and it had this kind of handle. He goes, and I see this hat. And he would see, like, not costumes, but clothing, articles of clothing, and props and clothing accessories.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he started working with the public, people would go, oh, I have a photograph of my great-great-grandfather in exactly what you're talking about,
or,
you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And so what was fun is for years he had done Renaissance fairs for costumes, but now he started doing the Renaissance fairs as a psychic medium.
Oh, okay.
And he kind of pulled the Renaissance historical awareness into it, and it was fascinating. But he was a softer version of himself. He was so much more pleasant to get along with, and it was very cool to see how he developed that in his last years.
It sounds like he was happier too. It sounds like he was a lot happier.
Oh, way happier, way happier. He had shed so many burdens; it was unreal. And then when he transitioned, it's like he pops back, and he's been gone, like I said, 7 years, but he pops back in my life a lot.
Mm.
You know, he's like one of my biggest supporters of all the things that I do, and I know I can always count on him. As a matter of fact, when my cat, I had to take my cat to the vet a year ago this month to be put to sleep because she was at the end of her physical life. I asked Steve if he would meet her on the other side because he was a mega cat person, and he said he would. And when I left the vet, you know, and now my cat had transitioned, it's like before I could even ask, Steve just told me as I was getting in my car, I have her. She's with me. It's all good.
Oh, good.
And it was such a wonderful feeling, giving me such a feeling of well-being and knowing that all was well with the world and that there was no sadness to be had because she was in a good place with someone who adored her.
So. Now, I have to ask you, is he one of your non-physical advisors about Project X?
Not that I'm aware of. It doesn't mean that he can't be a part of the gazillions that are supporting me, but he hasn't stepped forward specifically to tell me that he's part of it.
Oh, okay. Then just one last question. What exactly is a gazillion?
A gazillion to Wendy is more than I can count.
Ah, okay. All right.
That's a gazillion.
And hopefully you can
is
count
gazillion pretty
high.
Not a real word?
Well, no, it's one of our technical terms, you know, like icky and ew.
Well, I say that because I use the word gazillion a lot. And you and I offline yesterday were talking about how we needed a dictionary just for the words that we come up with.
Oh, absolutely.
I said, I'm going to have to create new words.
We'll have to call it the LOA Today Glossary of Terms. Otherwise, people will be totally
there
lost.
Yeah, gazillion will definitely be in there. That means, like, it's big. It's a really big number.
Oh, I like the first definition. It's a number higher than Wendy can count. I like that one.
Yep. How about you, Walt? Have you had anything splendid happening in your day today?
I actually spent a good part of my day reworking what I thought I had finished yesterday. One of the stories for the book that we're putting together. In the process of editing, I got to one of the stories that Louise and I are working on together. And she had written the first bit of it, and I had written some of it, and then we were kind of mixing them all together. And I thought yesterday I had a completed version. And then, as so often happens, you know, you put something into the drawer and pick it up the next day, and you read it through. It's like, oh, no, I forgot all this part. And then you start writing more stuff. So that's what I was doing a large part of today. I wanted to, because it's a really very intricate story. It's probably going to be the last story in the book. Kind of like, you know how I like swoops, right? Those swoop endings. Well, this is going to be like a swoop ending. And it is a really involved story. I think the reason I want to put it at the end is that, I mean, Louise pointed out it could actually be probably three different stories. But for me, they're all part of one story. Actually, it's about four stories. It's part of one story because they all happened at the same time. And they interwove each other so much within each other's stories that at one point, they are all inseparable. And it's at one point in the story, which is the key crisis in the story. So to me, it's all one great big story. And I just had to go through and make sure that I had, you know, completely told the whole story. So that's what I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I went and took a walk.
Oh, so, that's a nice way to end it.
Yeah. And then took my shower, came in here, and boom, there you were on the line, and we're ready to go for today's show. So is there a Project X report? I should ask that before we go into the book.
Nothing that I can think of that's anything unusual or new or different.
Okay.
It's more a continuation of a very solid feeling that all is well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, I have greater awareness that, you know, the door that's closing before the new door can open, I definitely sense the closing.
Ah.
It's a very strong feeling within me. So
okay.
Thanks for asking.
Yep.
And it's all good.
That's good to hear. That's really good to hear. Well, we are nowhere near the end of part two. I promised I would say that, of the Law of Attraction, the basics of the teachings of Abraham. And
oh, I'm just going to joke with you. We actually are near. It's just we're not going to get to it anytime soon.
See, now you're just messing with my head. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. Thank you.
So anyway, we're actually up to a number of very, very short subsections where Abraham does some riffing on affirmations and positive things to say to ourselves, positive little stories to tell. So this could actually be kind of fun. Now, I don't know how much time we'll take to go through them, because like you say, we can take, you know, an hour to go through four sentences. But, you know, we'll just go as far as it goes. So now the first one, I have to say, the first one had, as soon as I read the subhead title, I said, that's a weird title. And you'll know why as soon as I say it. Because the title is, What are some words to enhance being well-being? Being well-being. Like Jean Valjean. Like, I mean, being what the heck is being well-being? Like,
well, let's first define, do you know what well-being is?
Hopefully it's being well within yourself, but I don't know. What's your definition of it?
Well, no, I would agree. But when, because I do understand the way this sentence is put together, because this is kind of how a lot of folks in the metaphysical world speak now, that this is actually common languaging, that there's doing, there's being, and there's having.
Okay.
And I actually didn't put it in the appropriate sequence, but doing, having, and being is normally the sequencing that metaphysical people discuss those things in. And, you know, if you have something, obviously you own it, you possess it. But if you do something, then you're taking an action. But when you're in a state of being, it's like that's like the ultimate place of owning, doing, and just existing in the essence of whatever it is that is the subject of your desire.
Okay, well, I can follow that. So with that as a starting definition, how do we handle being well-being?
Well, so like when you're in the state of happy, you can do happy, as in like you can do things that make you happy, or you can have experiences in your life that bring happiness. But when you're being happy, truly being happy, it permeates throughout the entirety of your being, of yourself, of your body, of your spirit, of your mind, of your soul. You're in the state of being. You're not becoming, you are it. Kind of like in the Christian Bible, you know, Jehovah talks about himself as the I am.
Okay.
When you are I am, you are being. You're in a state of being.
Okay.
You're in a state of being. And so using this phrasing is common in the world that I live in. But I also understand it took me a long time to go, what the heck are people talking about? So it doesn't surprise me.
Well, it sounds redundant.
Understand it.
I mean, being well-being is clearly a redundant phrase. So the question is, why does the word being have to be in there twice?
Oh, because to me, it's not the two different beings are completely different. The first being, when it says, what are some words to enhance being? That has to do with how you actually live in the energy of. And then well-being is a phrase unto itself. Well-being is like, it's a noun.
What does it mean?
It's like wellness. It's like wellness.
So to rephrase, it's the energy of wellness.
Yes. So it's like, how can you enhance having wellness in your life? How can you enhance being in the pool of energy that is wellness.
Well, forgive me for being, you know, blasé and non-metaphysical, but why can't we just say that? I mean, it's just
you
it's more clear.
You certainly can. And that's why, you know, I kind of helped to redefine it. This is how many metaphysical people talk. And so this is a perfectly normal sentence in metaphysical terminology.
People wonder why it took me long to get used to metaphysical terminology, but okay. So anyway.
So if you want to enhance, you could say, what are some words to enhance being in a state of wellness?
Okay. Is it possible to effectively have energy in a state of poorness? Isn't that like, you know, inverted logic?
Maybe. I find that when the phrase well-being is used, that has to do with your highest and best good. Like whatever serves you in the highest possible way, that's you living in a state of well-being. So, is well-being a phrase that you use often or that you're familiar with?
I do use the phrase. I don't think I tend to use it as explicitly as you use it. For me, I use it more generally.
Okay.
You know, my well-being is basically, you know, how well am I feeling?
Oh, okay. You are using it a little bit differently then. Because well-being is really the optimum state of beingness.
Okay. Well, you say potato, I say potato. Let's just call the whole thing off.
Have we played with that one enough?
So anyway, Jerry says, could you give us some words that we could use to help attract a variety of things like perfect health?
Abraham says, I want perfect health. I like feeling good. I enjoy my good feeling body. I have many positive memories of feeling good in my body. I see people who are clearly in a state of good health, and it is easy to see how much they are enjoying their good feeling bodies. When I think thoughts like these, I feel good. These thoughts are in harmony with a healthy body.
Well, that's a pretty good one. I like that. So Jerry says, mm-hmm. How about perfect financial prosperity?
Abraham says, well, you could say, I want financial prosperity. There are so many wonderful things that are readily available in this wonderful world, and financial prosperity opens the doors to so many of those things. Since the law of attraction responds to my thoughts, I've decided to focus predominantly upon the abundance that is possible, understanding that it's only a matter of time before my thoughts of prosperity will be matched by the flow of financial prosperity. Since the law of attraction will bring me the object of my attention, I choose abundance.
I think I'm going to borrow some of that phrasing. I'm just now getting back into that outline that I mentioned that I started with Louise many months ago about our goals and so forth. And I'm kind of trying to get into doing a little bit of that every day as I'm also doing the editing on the book, you know, so like do 3 hours on the book and then, you know, 10 minutes on the outline, that sort of thing. I think I'll grab this. I'll plug that in.
You know, I was thinking about this last night and the night before. There were some things that I really want to focus on concerning my physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking of, okay, what things can I focus on? And I literally was getting this sense of this will overwhelm me at this time.
Really?
It's like Project X has my undivided attention. And it's the first time I've ever given something my undivided attention over a long period of time. And so I have this sense, allow Project X to unfold. Then when it does, kind of on the heels of it, because, you know, once you have something, you go, well, now what? Well, my physical body's the now what? It's like as soon as Project X manifests, it's like, okay, then all these desires and questions about my physical body are like next in line.
Oh.
And I purposely intend to shift my focus that I now am creating this wonderful ability to focus very deliberately, and I'm going to shift it to my physical body next. And I'm excited about that. So I'm kind of pre-planning, pre-getting excited about where I'm going to put my point of attention in the very, very near future.
Well, that sounds very cool. And as you were saying that, it made me think of something that I thought about when I was taking my walk today. And I was kind of debating, do I say it during the program or not? And my initial inclination was, no, it's too unformed a thought. But what you said somehow cued it in my mind. I don't even know what the connection is. I can't even see a connection. But because it cued in my mind, I figured, okay, I got to put it out there. I was contemplating a lot of stuff in a kind of a vague sense. And at one point, I fell onto a favorite topic of mine, which is longevity and living a long, healthy life, and actually even attaining rejuvenation of the body and of health and everything else like that. I mean, one of my goals is to get back the body of a 25-year-old and have the life of a 25-year-old from a physical point of view, in terms of just, having the energy and the flexibility and all that kind of good stuff. And I like that idea. In fact, that's one of the things that I am going to include in my outline. But as I was kind of, just gently, vaguely grazing over it, not really pondering it deeply, a thought came to me. The thought that came to me is that it was actually a dual thought. One part of it was what Abraham has said, which is, we can live longer lives for sure. Obviously, we all die at some point, but that's just part of where we are as a species, as non-physical beings living the spiritual or living in the physical world, and that's just part of nature. It's the part of the way the whole thing works. But on the other hand, the potential for expanding lifespan is definitely there. So again, I was just kind of floating on that a little bit, and I noticed that the older people get, it becomes more and more common, and we all know this, for people, particularly non-alloy types, to focus on all their aches and pains, all the things going wrong, and so forth. And it also occurred to me that the people who focus on the most are the ones who tend to deteriorate the quickest. Well, not too much surprise there. But then what occurred to me is, you know what, as time goes on, certainly as an LOA deliberate creation practitioner, I'm developing a better focus like you did. I guess that's what the connection is to what you said. We're developing sharper ability to focus deliberately on what it is we want to focus to, and getting better and better at not allowing ourselves to deviate and be, distracted and put our attention elsewhere when we have our intention of staying, right here, right on this point, that whatever that point is that we're looking at. Is it possible, I asked myself, that over time we become more and more powerful in this lifetime? And I have no way to validate that. I have no way to even explain how it could happen. But the reason I wondered about that is I wonder if, as we go on, we actually do develop more and more ability to differentiate, to focus, to be specific about what we're focusing on. And I wonder if many of us do that by default as we get older. And in the process of doing that, we actually, to put it, I don't know of a nice way to put it, so I'll just put it this way. We actually kill ourselves off faster because our power has gotten so much bigger, but we haven't learned how to use it right. And I wonder if that the inverse of that is, if we can learn how to refocus better, that helps us to produce a longer lifestyle. Now, this is not pure LOA theory by any stretch, and I can't think of a way to fit this in. But the thought occurred to me, do we develop more power, more ability, just because we're around here longer?
Well, I have some thoughts if you'd like me to share my
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
consideration.
this is really unformed. That this is like a
Yeah,
nascent idea that just
but
kind of
I
came out of
liked it.
nowhere.
I think you bring up some really interesting points. And what I would say is my belief is, because when we come into the physical world, we are completely as powerful as we're going to be, kind of, sort of. I mean, we're powerful beings before we come here. And I believe we're powerful beings when we show up here. And then I believe we begin to dilute our power as we take on earthly thoughts that are actually resistant in nature. And I think every time we add more resistance to us, we're able to express our power less and less. And so, I mean, if you've heard the phrase, take your power back, I think what taking your power back is when you release beliefs that don't serve you, when you release pockets of resistance that are actually holding you down. and you become more powerful, and I'll use my words, the clearer you become.
Mm-hmm.
And how I define that is you've cleared so much of the negative stuff that was the baggage of your life that you kind of buoy to the surface lighter. And the lighter you are and the less baggage holding you down, I believe the more clear your energy vibration broadcast is. And then I believe you're more powerful both in your own person as well as the broadcast that you send out. So in a way, I feel like I've become more powerful the older, the chronologically older I've become, but I don't believe it's because of age. I believe it has a lot, everything to do with how I have chosen to focus my thoughts and my energy.
Okay, well, I certainly would agree with that from an LOA perspective. What I'm also trying to do, though, is explain why it is that among I'm trying to think how to describe it, the muggles, among those who are not LOA practitioners, those who don't follow the theory and don't really understand what's behind it and so forth, they just live their lives by default because they always have. Even among them, I still observe the increase in power, but I usually see it used in terms of producing negative results, just more powerfully, more quickly. So that makes me wonder if the power grows not just because we're focusing positively, but just because we're focusing, period, one way or another, positive or negative.
Okay, well, that's interesting because I was using power in a more positive way, but I think you're talking about it, if we were to kind of take out the positive or negative, more intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see a lot more, what I think I'm hearing is you're saying you see a lot more intensity in people's illness?
Well, in their focus, in the things they focus on, regardless of whether they're what we would call deliberate creators, I think the longer that people are here, they become better at focusing one way or another. And you see it in a wide variety of results that show up in their lives, but it's nevertheless, it's a stronger focus. I mean, the people who pursue the big, big dreams more often will tend to get them a little bit later. Some people get their dreams really early in life. But more people get some variation on their dreams later on in life. And I'm not saying that most of them are dreams I'd like to pursue, but nevertheless, they pursue them and they achieve them. And as they go through life and they're achieving more and more of those dreams, you can just see, like, pick any person who we know is a relatively famous person and just look at the way you see them in an interview or, you know, when they're presented on in a movie or, you know, whatever it might be. Just look at the way their focus is. The people who have been doing whatever it is they're doing for the longer period of time, their focus gets so much better.
Well, I guess I can't tell from what you're saying if you're referring to focusing on things that they desire or focusing on things they don't desire.
Well, it can be either one.
Or are you just saying whatever they focus on, they're just doing it more intensely?
Exactly. It's whatever they focus on. I'm not selecting anything about what they're focusing on. But
okay.
Here's a more concrete example. Louise likes watching Downton Abbey, and I watched Downton Abbey with her for at least some of the episodes. Some of them I couldn't stomach. But the point is, we've also seen some of the award shows they've been on. We've seen some of the interviews that the lead actors, interviewed in and so forth. One of the the making of type films had a section where the guy who played the underbutler was being interviewed about the time when Shirley MacLaine came onto the program. She played a role in Downton Abbey, and she and Maggie Smith, you know, the two old ladies, you know, of the acting profession, were kind of going head to head in their roles there, and the rest of the cast were just fascinated watching these two old, you know, strong, wonderful actors going at it. And it occurred to me, well, one of the reasons they are such great actors is because they have refined their ability to do their roles, to focus, to create their characters so effortlessly and so quickly and so convincingly that when these two characters were basically sparring, you believed every second of the way that one of them was Lady Grantham and the other one was the Duchess's mother-in-law or mother from America, and that they were actually fighting it out. You believed it because it was just so believable. Well, those are two actors who are at the top of their game. I wonder if they're at the top of the game in part because they've been just doing it so long.
Well, but doesn't that bring the concept of momentum into play?
Well, yeah, that possibly does, and I'm not sure how to tie it.
Yeah, I mean, when you've been doing something a long time, you've obviously been focusing on that thing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have momentum going on pretty strong. If you've been doing something for 30 years consistently, to just say, stop, I don't want to do it anymore, doesn't happen in a day.
Yeah, right.
Because even when you say, stop, I don't want to do it anymore, the momentum is continually bringing new thoughts and ideas on this thing that you now want to stop.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
Because that's the job of law of attraction, to bring mm-hmm. you more thoughts and ideas.
That's right.
On whatever topic that you're focused on. So, you know, I definitely would say for those who are the older part of our population, those who are focusing on their lack of wellness, their focusing power gathers strength and momentum in a big way, because if they've been focusing on not feeling good for a very long, long time, that's what they just keep focusing on. And law of attraction helps them by bringing them more thoughts of things to focus on.
And it makes me wonder, with all that momentum and all the experience that comes with that momentum, does that combination of momentum and experience help them sharpen their focus even more?
I would think so.
Well, if that's the
case, I feel like me focusing on Project X was cumbersome in the beginning. It felt very manual to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it was like a chore, but it didn't come naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like I've been focusing on it with so much intensity for, you know, 2+ months that I don't have to make myself think about Project X. It's like Project X has taken on a life of its own, and it thinks me. And when I say that, that's like law of attraction is constantly bringing new thoughts to me about Project X. And so now I'm kind of in that sweet spot where I don't have to effort to think about Project X. Project X is constantly being thought through me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So what does that cause you to think? I mean, does that fit in with what you're talking about?
I think it reinforces what I'm saying. I'm not 100% sure, because these thoughts are pretty new to me, you know, in the sense mm-hmm. of putting them together in this kind of configuration. But I just continue to get the sense that whether it is caused by the momentum or whether the momentum represents simply all the attention over time, but one way or another, I think the combination is producing a higher rate of focus, and I think it's happening for everybody, regardless of what they're attracting into their lives, regardless of whether they're doing it by default or by deliberate creation. I think everybody's focus just simply improves and sharpens over time.
Well, if you think about someone who's 70 versus somebody who's 20, the one who's 70, if they've been thinking on something since they were 20,
mm-hmm.
they've got a lot of momentum and focusing going on in a certain area of life.
They do, yeah.
Where a 20-year-old just doesn't have that much time put in yet.
Mm.
So maybe you started out referring to are people who are much older in our population and how they seem to have a keener sense of focus.
Yeah.
Because they are older, they've been able to focus longer.
It may be that simple. But it also means that the older we get, the more powerful we get in terms of our ability to focus. So that means we are better able to, once we learn deliberate creation anyway, we are better able to be deliberate creators. I'm not sure how it works out with default creators. It may work out badly, I don't know.
Default creators. I think a lot of people are doing stuff by default, and they're just as powerful as someone who creates by deliberate intent. The only difference is what is the desired result. Are they getting the desire they want or the undesire?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah. So anyway, that was just sort of
random
thought.
But it also doesn't mean that just because you're a deliberate creator doesn't mean you can't get good stuff. There are plenty of people who, without having any knowledge of law of attraction, have somehow found a way to focus on what they want, and they go down the road beautifully.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not like it's not like this is a unique club.
No. I mean, when you think about some of the greatest people in history, you know, they weren't privy to Abraham of the 21st century.
No, not at all.
You know, but it didn't mean that they didn't have access to their inner being. We've yep. always all had that.
Right. Yep.
You know, it's and true. Some people have always been much more in tune with all of who they really are, seeking or getting guidance. Some knew that that's what they were doing and some didn't, but it's what they were doing nonetheless.
Well, let's see. Jerry and Abraham have touched on health and financial prosperity, and I think next comes relationships. It is, yes. Jerry says, and so continuing the theme, what about great relationships?
And Abraham says, some of the things that you can say are, I want great relationships. I so enjoy nice, clever, funny, energetic, stimulating people, and I love knowing that this planet is abundant with them. I've met so many interesting people, and I love the discovery of fascinating characteristics in people I meet. It seems that the more I enjoy people, the more that whom I enjoy. Oh, that is an ugly sentence. Let me say that again. It seems that the more I enjoy people, the more people whom I enjoy come into my experience. I love this time of spectacular co-creation.
And Jerry says, how about positive non-physical experiences?
Let me think about what that means. Positive non-physical experiences.
In other words, he wants to attract positive non-physical experiences. What affirmations would he use to do that?
Okay. And Abraham says, I want to attract those who are in harmony with me, physical and non-physical. I'm fascinated by the law of attraction and am comforted by the knowledge that when I'm feeling good, I can only attract that which feels good. I love understanding that the basis of that which is non-physical is pure positive energy. I enjoy utilizing my emotional guidance system so I can rendezvous with that source.
Well, that's good. That's a good little rampage for non-physical. I like that. And then Jerry says, and what about continual joyous growth?
And Abraham says, I am a growth-seeking being, and it is exhilarating to remember that expansion is not only natural, but inevitable. I love knowing that joy is simply a choice. Since my expansion is inevitable, I choose to have it all in joy.
And Jerry asks, and that will attract...
By the way, I love the word inevitable.
Oh, really?
I love the word inevitable.
Why is that?
Yeah. Because to me, it's bigger than just it, you know, it's not just something I want is not just a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I love when I have a knowing that it's inevitable,
oh, I see
which
what
is
you
like,
mean.
It's a done deal. It's yeah. on its way. It's already done on a spiritual, metaphysical level. And it's just a matter of time until its inevitability shows up in three-dimensional form. Mm-hmm. I love that word.
Okay.
Project X for me has reached the point of inevitability.
It's beyond the point of no return.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just I wonder and I hope and, well, I've been working really hard towards it. It's like, oh, no, it's done. It's so done.
Very nice.
You know, I'm waiting, like we talked about yesterday, it's just like waiting for the closing date on a new house where you pick up your keys. It's like I'm just waiting on the closing date of Project X because it's inevitable. I put down my down payment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been approved for the Project X project to come into my life. So it's inevitable. I love that word.
I can understand why. So after asking about each of these little affirmation rampages from Abraham, Jerry summarizes by asking, and that will attract these things?
And Abraham says, your words, and words is in italics, your words will not bring you immediate manifestation of what you're asking for, but the more often you say them and the better you feel while you are saying them, the purer or less contradicted your vibration will be. And soon your world will be filled with these things that have been spoken about. Words alone do not attract, but when you feel emotion, when you speak, that means your vibration is strong and the law of attraction must answer those vibrations.
And while it's not a happy word, it's not a happy word, but I love that one little piece that they threw in there. The purer or less contradicted your vibration will be. And the reason I like that
is
that...
Why is it not a happy word?
Well, it's not initially a happy word because when you contradict yourself about something you're trying to attract, that's usually a way of stopping it from showing up. So that makes it a little bit unhappy because you didn't manifest the thing that you wanted to show up. But the reason I like it is because it's a reminder that it's really rare in our lives when we have a true, pure, attractive quality to our thoughts and feelings. Most of the time, especially if we're learning to become deliberate creators on a massive scale, we're learning to be very pure. We're learning to be, you know, purer than we've ever been. But it's really rare to be 100% pure and to hold that for a long period of time. That doesn't happen too often. Most of the time, there's at least some contradiction in our thought process, in our subconscious mind. I mean, in various ways, little negative thoughts crop up. Although I have to say, when you do mirror work, they show up less and less often. Just as a little bit of a side there. But my point is, they're saying that the purer or less contradicted your vibration will happen because you're continuing to repeat these affirmations over and over again. In other words, it's not about achieving purity. It's about reducing the level of contradiction. You don't have to eliminate it all. You just have to reduce it. And sure, ideally, you want to get to the point where it's pure, but you don't have to be at purity before things start manifesting. That's a great piece of news.
I totally agree. And like, I have seen energy or different issues in my life in terms of a weighted scale. Like I'm a Libra by astrological means. Mm-hmm. And the visual for me is like the scales,
right,
where you can put things on the left and the right and, you know, they go up and down. And so that's a visual that I use quite often, even when I'm thinking about, you know, where am I in terms of the manifestation of something? How much resistance is on one scale versus how much pure positive energy is on the other side of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you get more on the pure positive focus of focusing on what you desire, and when that one becomes more weighted and there's less of the resistant thoughts and energies and vibrations, it's like you move towards inevitability of manifestation.
Yes, exactly.
You know? And so I don't know exactly at what point, because I don't think I was using this metaphor with Project X, but I know I've used it on many things where all of a sudden I just get a sense I've just hit the tipping point.
Ah.
And what that has always mean for me is that the resistance side is less heavy than it ever was. And I finally reached that 50-50 point. And now I'm at 51 or 52 or 53% more on the positive column than I am the negative. And I know when I've hit the tipping point and things are moving more in the direction of what I do desire, one, I will know that there's more momentum now moving in the direction of that which I desire. But two, now it becomes more feasible that what I want is going to continue so long as I continue on the path of focusing on that which I want in order to reduce that which I don't want.
Yeah, that's a reinforcing thing, and it's a reassuring thing that even if we have a whole lot of negativity built up, and I say this from experience because I had a ton of negativity built up, and even now I'm still overcoming some of the momentum that's associated with that, although it's improving at a very rapid rate now. But for the longest time, I would say even after I identified my negative traits that I didn't know I even had at the time, but I finally had to come to realize, yeah, they were really there and they were pretty strong. From that point on, I kept working on trying to get myself to feel better, trying to find ways to, you know, appreciate things and to love things and love, you know, my wife and people in my life and all that kind of stuff. And it worked. It as time went on, I got better and better and better at it. And yet it took the longest time to overcome that negative momentum. And finally, I did reach that tipping point. I'm not even sure where the tipping point was, to be perfectly honest. If I had to pick one, I would have said it was sometime either last November when I met up with you and Tom and Cindy, or perhaps a year ago in May when David came on board, because those are two key points where things started to really swoop upward for LOA today. And so I consider those to be really key points in my personal development and in the development of my life. But that's about as close as I can come to saying where the tipping point is. What I do know is over time, wherever that tipping point was, I had finally reached it, and I could start to see the whole dynamic of my life changing. And that's very reassuring. It means I don't have to get rid of all of it at once. I can get rid of it at the speed that I can get rid of it and not worry about the fact that it's not all gone. And that's just, for me, that's just really reassuring. Other people don't seem to even care about it. I can tell from the way they post. They don't give a darn. But I care because it took me a while. So, like, great, I got here.
Well, what is it? You said the ones on Facebook, they don't care about it, but you do. What is it?
Overcoming their own negativity. They to my mind, if I'm describing it from my perspective, there are people who will go out of their way to explain to you how positive they are being. And then they'll explain all the different ways that it proved negative. And they will wax poetic about all the different ways that it proved negative. And then when you say, well, you need to focus more on the positive, they'll say, I am. They're not even thinking about the fact that they have all this negativity coming out of their mouths and through their heads. They're skipping it mentally, so to speak. It's all there. It's all coming out.
So in other words, it's not that they're not thinking about it. Maybe it's just they're completely unaware.
It could be lack of awareness, but it's certainly lack of recognition. They won't recognize it.
Well, you can't recognize that which you're not aware of.
Okay. I think one implies a certain degree of intent, but that's all right. It's a minor point. It's not important.
Well, I mean, I know plenty of people that will have a conversation and will say, we are going to really focus on just speaking positive things and that which we desire. And then the very next paragraph is about this thing that they do not want.
Right.
And I'll think to myself, I do not believe that they're aware of this. And I've even pointed it out.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, oh, yeah, I know what you're saying. And, oh, I'm not speaking anything negative.
Mm-hmm.
And I know very well they have just spoken three paragraphs worth of negativity.
Right.
So what that tells me, because I know the people intimately and they're people of great integrity, they're just completely blind to how what they're saying really is not positive.
Oh, I agree. And I've run into a lot of people like that too. And in fact, I have done similar things saying, are you aware that you said this, and these are really negative statements? And you're right. Very often I do get a response that indicates, no, that really was not part of their thought process. And it's either, oh,
or they'll say, no, you
that.
Misunderstood. I'm
yeah,
like,
you misunderstood.
Okay.
Or perhaps thank you very much for pointing it out, or just maybe skipping it entirely. There are a lot of different ways to react to it. The other thing that I have seen, though, is people who will try to argue that it's not negative stuff. And that's where I'm not 100% sure that they're not aware of it.
Oh, yeah. I've had some of those conversations.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? You really don't see how this is negative?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not even because it's important to me that it's negative or positive, but when I'm working with somebody, and I'm talking like just even a friend, when I have a friend who's bemoaning something that they're not achieving in their life, something that they desperately desire, and they say they're doing all the right stuff, you know, and I have carte blanche with this person because it's been our agreement that if I see something that's a contradiction to the very thing they're wanting to create, that it's okay for me to point it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I wait for a point when I think, okay, hopefully they'll be able to receive this. And I'll say, well, I just listened to you saying the following three things, all of which are going in the opposite direction of where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll either say, no, that's not what I said, or no, that's not what I meant, or you must have misunderstood.
Right, right.
And, you know, trust me, I'm not saying that I'm the be-all, end-all, and I know everything, but I do recognize that somebody outside of the individual is always going to be more objective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I have an objective point of view, like, okay, I'm hearing the words you're saying, and I'm really pretty empathic, and I'm feeling what you're saying. And it's kind of all going south here. And they're going, oh, no, it's not. So when that happens, I recognize they're not open in that moment to get it. And so that's where I hold them in a space of, I know what they desire. I know that they really want their highest and best good. And in a moment that they're in a space of receptivity, you know, hey, beings who love us all, you know, can you like just help them recognize and understand the thing that's actually stopping them from getting the thing that they desire. Because yeah. I know if they were getting what they desired, we wouldn't have anything to be talking about.
That's exactly right, yes.
The fact that I keep hearing the same thing over and over, broken record, every time we have the same conversation, when they're beating the drum of, I still don't have what I want, I still don't have what I want, I still don't have what I want. I'm like, well, that kind of proves my point.
Yeah.
But if they don't get it, that's okay. They'll get it when they get it.
They'll get it when they get it. That's really true, yeah.
And it's not my job to help them get it.
No.
You know, they ask me for my help and I try, and if they don't receive it, then okay. And I let go and I move on, but I'm not going to try to beat that dead horse either and go, you have to get it. You have to get it. 'Cause I'm so smart and I see it. It's like, oh no, that's not how it works.
Yeah. People are, they're entertaining at times. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, literally it's kind of funny what happens, the way people will justify, you know, what they're saying and try to kind of futilely cover over the fact that they just uttered a whole series of contradicting statements. And they just don't see it that way.
It reminds me of something where I recognize we all have certain values on things as to what, you know, things mean and what's important in our life. And I remember many years ago, I was at a Tony Robbins seminar, and it was during a break, I believe, or a lunch or something. And I was getting to know different people there. And there was a group of us, and we were sitting around talking and just kind of sharing stories. And I had shared some story, and I don't remember the specifics of it, but I remember it was something where I had kind of berated myself with humor, and it caused everybody to laugh. And that was my intention, was to talk about something that was funny, that people could relate to. And at the time, I was, you know, I had not lived in Texas that long. I still considered myself quite the Chicagoan, you know, with a Midwest cultural style of conversation, which can be very sarcastic. And I remember this gal pulled me aside after this gathering. And oh, I know, she didn't pull me aside. We just happened to have found each other together in the ladies' room waiting in line. And she said to me, hey, I listened to the story that you told about blah, blah, blah. And she said, I just wondered if you were aware of how much you were berating yourself in that story. And I went, yeah, but that's what was funny about it, because I can laugh at it now. And she kind of looked at me like I could tell she had a really strong intent. And I was having a hard time understanding her. Every time she'd say words, I felt very defensive, because I'm like, yeah, but this is my story. This is my thing. And like, what's it to you? And I could tell she was wanting so desperately for me to understand something. And she just kept talking and she kept talking, and I kept being defensive and kept being defensive. So anyway, for as much difference as there was in our conversation, it never got ugly. You know, unfortunately, the line moved forward and we went and did what we needed to do. But her trying to get something across to me, even though in the moment I didn't get it. I mean, I truly didn't get it. Because she was trying to say to me, I recommend you never tell that story again, because in telling it, you're actually hurting yourself. And I was in complete disagreement with her. But that story just wouldn't, I couldn't let that go. It's like, I just kept thinking about that and thinking about it and going, there is something in here that just, I sense that there's a niggle of truth and I have not been open to receive it. And I don't know what it is. So I just kind of kept that in my focus with the expectation that I would get some new awareness, because, you know, you cannot see what you cannot see. And at that moment, I could not see what this girl was talking about. And for me, in other words, for me to make a big change in how I tell my stories and in how I do humor and whatever, I just didn't get it. And so I don't know how long it took me. But I started to understand about things that were important to me, and making connection and having good rapport is definitely something that's high on my values list. And getting people to laugh was always like the easiest way to get people to rapport and bond with me. So that was like a strategy that I'd been using for years, and it was so successful. My thought is, why the heck would I give that up? But the more I thought on this, she was not at all saying that what I, because I had said that, like, hey, this is how I bond with people. It's my, it's my ace in the hole. And she wasn't refuting any of those things. But she was trying to say, yes, but at the expense of you. And that was the part I didn't understand for a long time. And then I did start to understand things on a bigger level, as in when you say something negative to another person, your unconscious mind doesn't know the difference between them and you. So when you spew ugly words to them, your spirit feels the negativity as though it's being said to you. And that was a concept that was new to me. But I started to recognize the validity of that. Because when, like I've shared this before, like when I'm talking to somebody in a customer service role and I'm getting all upset and angry and frustrated with them, I pay the price. Because when I get off the phone, I'm angry and frustrated and ticked off for a good couple hours. So if I want to get mad at somebody, I do it at the expense of end of feeling really ugly for a long time. So back to this lady's, you know, gentle commenting to me, I eventually agreed with her that when I tell a story at the expense of berating myself and making myself look stupid or ugly or dumb, I was actually taking in the feelings of stupid, ugly, and dumb. And yes, I may have told a story that made a whole room full of people laugh, but that was only for the moment. But I'm the one who was still holding on to these feelings of negativity. I didn't know it at the time that's what I was doing, but I started to, like, you know, dig under the hood. And I went, oh, now what do I do? Now that I recognize that this is actually hurting me, how do I build rapport? That's the reason I was willing to do this at my own expense, because I was building rapport and bonding with people. So eventually I found other ways to talk about things in a way that didn't hurt me, but that uplifted everyone. And we all still got a laugh. Now, it took me a while to do that, but I guess I'm sharing that because we're talking about, you know, people who don't get it. And it's like, I understand when you don't get it, because you don't get it when you don't get it. I was blind to it because I had very solid reasons for why I was doing what I was doing. And it felt like really good reasons. And why would I give this up? Until I found another idea that caused me to go, huh, this is hurting me. I'm going to let this go. Don't know how, but I'm going to. And so I would say I no longer use humor to berate myself to get people to laugh.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's a very good thing.
But, I mean, and I wanted to throw that out there because we were kind of making others, like the bad guys, because they don't get it. But it's like we all are in that place until we get it.
Oh, yeah. And let me be really as clear as I can. I was trying to do that before, but I guess I didn't do a good job. I really wasn't trying to say that you know, they don't get it, that to make him out the bad guy or anything like that. I was simply trying to identify a pattern that was going on. That's all I was worried about. But you're right.
I did understand that. I just wanted to kind of expand that idea mm-hmm. in a broader sense, because it's really easy for most of us to think in terms of us and them.
Sure.
And when we have a point of view, everybody else is a them. But when we can put ourselves in the position that we go, there is no us and them. It's just all us.
The only other thing that there is no of, unfortunately, is there's no more time. So we have to kind of draw a line there. But this has been
great.
But
I think we managed to do almost a whole page.
We did. Well, we completed the section. That's a good thing. You know, so we actually did a little bit more than a page. So good for us.
We did a page and a half.
How about
Woo-hoo!
That? Yeah. This is like, you know, this is Indianapolis speed.
Yeah. With a page and a half to go, we're doing good.
There we go. All right. So we'll pick it up again tomorrow. Wendy, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Absolutely. Let's do it again.
We shall do exactly that. We hope you join us as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.